Hey, I'm Sapphire. Want to hear something scary? For these next six stories, we'll travel deep into the darkness, where twisted fairy tales take place and mysterious creatures lurk around every corner. So grab a flashlight and leave a breadcrumb trail as we read our first chapter. A Grimm's fairy tale that I'm sure your mother never read to you. Once upon a time, there was a sorcerer who disguised himself as a poor man, went begging from house to house, and captured beautiful girls. No one knew where he took them, for none of them ever returned. One day, he came to the door of a man who had three beautiful daughters. He appeared to be a poor, weak beggar, and he carried a pack basket on his back. He asked for a bit to eat, and when the oldest daughter came out to give him a piece of bread, he touched her, and she was magically transported into his pack basket. Then he hurried away with powerful strides and carried her to his house in the middle of a dark forest. Everything was splendid in the house, and he gave her everything that she wanted.
"My dear, you will like it here with me. You will have everything that your heart desires."
So it went for a few days, and then he said to her,
"I have to go away and leave you alone for a short time. Here are the house keys. You may go everywhere and look at everything except for the one room that this little key here unlocks. I forbid you to go there."
He also gave her an egg.
"Take good care of this egg. You should carry it with you at all times, for if you should lose it, great misfortune would follow."
She took the keys and the egg and promised to take good care of everything. As soon as he had gone, she walked about in the house from top to bottom. The rooms glistened with silver and gold. She had never seen anything more beautiful. Finally, she came to the forbidden door. She wanted to pass it by, but curiosity got the best of her. She examined the key. It looked like any other one. She put it into the lock, twisted it a little, and then the door sprang open. She gasped. A large bloody basin stood in the middle, filled with the cut-up parts of dead girls. She was so terrified that she dropped the egg in the basin. She got it out again and wiped off the blood, but it was no use, for the blood kept coming back. She wiped and scrubbed, but she could not get rid of the stain. Not long afterward, the man returned from his journey, and he immediately asked for the key and the egg. She handed them to him, shaking all the while as she watched him examine the blood-stained egg.
"You went into that chamber against my will, and now, against your will, you shall go into it once again."
He threw her down, dragged her by her hair into the chamber, cut off her head on the block, then cut her up into pieces, and her blood flowed out onto the floor. Then he threw her into the basin with the others.
"Now I will go get the second one."
And, disguised as a poor man again, he went back to their house. The second sister brought him a piece of bread, and, as he had done to the first one, he captured her by merely touching her, and he carried her away. And everything went exactly as before. She let herself be led astray by her curiosity, opened the blood chamber, and looked inside. When he returned, she paid with her life. Then he went and captured the third sister, but she was clever and sly. After he had given her the keys and the egg, she carefully put the egg aside and then examined the house, finally entering the forbidden chamber. Her two dear sisters were lying there in the basin, miserably murdered and chopped to pieces. In spite of this, she proceeded to gather their parts together, placing them back in order, head, body, arms, and legs. Then, when nothing else was missing, the parts began to move. They joined together, and the two girls opened their eyes and came back to life. Rejoicing, they kissed and hugged one another. When the man returned home, he immediately demanded the keys and the egg. And when he was unable to detect any trace of blood on them, he said,
"You have passed the test. You shall be my bride."
He now had no more power over her and had to do whatever she demanded. "Good, but first, you must take a basket full of gold to my father and mother. In the meanwhile, I shall make preparations for the wedding." Then she ran to her sisters, whom she had hidden in a closet, and said, "The moment is here when I can rescue you. The evildoer himself shall carry you home. As soon as you have arrived at home, send help. She put them both into a basket and then covered them entirely with gold so that they couldn't be seen. Then she called the sorcerer in and said, "Now carry this basket away, but you are not to stop and rest at all. Take care, for I shall be watching you through my little window." The sorcerer lifted the basket onto his back and walked away with it. However, it pressed down so heavily on him that the sweat ran from his face. He sat down, taking a breath, but immediately heard, I can see that you're resting. Keep walking. He thought it was his bride calling to him from the window, so he got up again. But moments later, he sat back down, only to hear,
I can still see you. Do not stop.
Every time that he stopped walking, someone called out, and he had to walk on until, groaning and out of breath, he brought the basket with the gold and the two girls to their parents' house. At home, the bride was making preparations for the wedding feast, to which she had invited the sorcerer's friends. Then she took a skull with grinning teeth, adorned it with jewelry and with a wreath of flowers, carried it to the attic window, and faced it outwards. When everything was ready, she dipped herself into a barrel of honey, cut open the bed, and rolled around in it until she looked like a strange bird, and no one would have been able to recognize her. Then she walked outside and directed the wedding guests to the house. Finally, the sorcerer returned.
"You, where are you coming from?"
"I am coming from Fitcher's house."
"What is my young bride doing there?"
"She has swept the house from bottom to top, and now she is looking out of the attic window." The groom looked up. Seeing the decorated skull, he thought it was his bride, and he waved a friendly greeting to her. After he and all his guests had gone into the house, the bride's brothers and relatives arrived. They had been sent to rescue her. After all the guests had entered the house, the sisters and brothers closed up all the windows and doors and set it ablaze. The sorcerer, together with his friends, all burned to death. Damn, fairy tales are pretty savage. Our next chapter is inspired by an encounter that Maggie and her family experienced. Maggie, her parents, her older cousin Brad, and two friends, Ethan and Angel, went camping at Henry W. Coe State Park in California. It was her first time camping, so she was incredibly excited, but also a little scared. The thought of being out in the open, protected only by a layer of nylon, that's kind of creepy. But her family assured her that she'd be safe and they would have a lot of fun. People go camping all the time. What's the worst that could happen? They arrived at the park at night and set up their campsite. While her parents went to sleep, Maggie and her friends were still up, talking in their huge shared tent. At about 3 a.m., Brad decided he wanted a little adventure. "Hey, have you heard of the legend of China Hole?"
"Ew, that sounds gross," said Maggie.
"Don't be immature. China Hole is one of the more challenging hikes in the park. Along the trail is a creek. Legend has it, a married couple were walking the trail when all of a sudden, her husband threw her into the creek. He held her underwater until she stopped struggling. She had been cheating on him and he wanted to end her life. And now her angry spirit still resides in that creek and pulls down any men who look directly into the water. And the weirdest thing is, corpses will appear in the park, dead from drowning, but nowhere near the creek."
"You're so full of shit," Angel said.
"Our campsite isn't that far from the creek. Why don't we go find out?" Ethan, being the only other boy in the group, was not too thrilled about the idea of visiting a man-hating ghost, but he didn't want to look like a scaredy cat in front of Brad.
"Let's do it,"
he said in his most convincing voice. "I'm in," said Angel. All eyes were now on Maggie. Brad was always doing stuff like this. He loved messing with his younger cousin. And Maggie knew that if she said no, she would not hear the end of his teasing.
"Fine, let's go."
Lit cell phones in hand, they quietly crept out of their tent and toward the hiking trail. The only sounds in the air were the light crunching of their sneakers on the dirt and a gentle wind blowing. So when a bush rustled, they all jumped and pointed their cell phones toward the sound. They stared in silence, waiting to see if it would move again. "It was probably just a lizard or something," Brad said. "Let's keep moving." They continued to slowly make their way toward the supposedly haunted creek.
Brad suddenly stopped, causing Ethan, Angel, and Maggie to run into him. What are you doing?
Shh.
Brad was completely still. Brad, are you just trying to scare us?
Shh.
Do you guys see that? Brad slowly lifted his cell phone higher and higher until, in the distance, they could make out the faint outline of a woman. They all screamed and bolted back towards the campsite. They hastily zipped up the tent and hid in their sleeping bags. Maggie was trying to rationalize what they had just saw. Maybe it was just a shadow that looked like a woman. Either way, she was glad to be back in the tent. Then, she heard what sounded like footsteps outside of the tent. Slowly, she lowered her sleeping bag. On the tent was the silhouette of a woman. Maggie quickly retreated back into her bag. Eventually, she was able to fall asleep. The next morning, Maggie woke up to an empty tent. She heard voices outside, and so she went out to see what was going on. A few police officers were talking to her friends and parents. One of the officers saw Maggie and called for her to come over. "Hi, miss. Can you recall anything strange happening last night?" Maggie thought about the woman they saw on the trail and the silhouette outside their tent. "No. What's going on?" "We need you to come down to the station." Maggie and her family were taken down to the police station where they all had to take polygraph tests about what happened the night before. After they all passed, the officer told them what was going on. The body of an elderly woman was found a few yards from their campsite. "How did she die?" Brad asked. All the kids were wondering the same thing. "Multiple stab wounds," the officer said. They all let out a small sigh of relief. The legend of China Hole wasn't real. But then, who was that woman they saw in the darkness? Was it the woman who was murdered? Or her murderer? And whoever killed that woman, why did they spare Maggie and her family? Needless to say, Maggie hasn't been camping since. Tomorrow is Valentine's Day, a day that brings joy to many and misery to others. In honor of this holiday, I wanted to share one of my favorite stories about the scary things love makes us do. This is an abridged version of Hans Christian Andersen's famous tragic tale, The Little Mermaid. Far out in the ocean, the water is as blue as the petals of the loveliest cornflower and as clear as the purest glass. But it is very deep, too. It goes down deeper than any anchor rope will go, and many, many steeples would have to be stacked one on top of another to reach from the bottom to the surface of the sea. It is down there that the sea folk live. There was the Sea Queen, along with her granddaughters, the Sea Princesses. They were six lovely girls, but the youngest was the most beautiful of them all. Her skin was as soft and tender as a rose petal, and her eyes were as blue as the deep sea. But like all the others, she had no feet. Her body ended in a fish tail. The Little Mermaid loved hearing stories about the human world above. Her grandmother told her all she knew about ships and cities and of people and animals. The flowers were fragrant up there, for those at the bottom of the sea had no scent. "When you are 15, her grandmother said, "you will be allowed to rise up out of the ocean and sit on the rocks in the moonlight to watch the great ships sailing by." On her 15th birthday, the Little Mermaid rose up to the surface and watched a birthday celebration being held on a ship in honor of a handsome prince. She watched in awe as he laughed and smiled and shook people by the hand while the music rang out in the perfect evening. She couldn't take her eyes off of him. Then a violent storm hit, sinking the boat. The Little Mermaid swam towards the sinking prince and pulled him ashore. He lay there unconscious near a temple. She waited from a distance until a young woman from the temple found him. The prince regained consciousness and mistook the temple woman for his rescuer. He never even saw the Little Mermaid. Distraught, she dove back into the ocean. "If men aren't drowned," the Little Mermaid asked her grandmother, "do they live on forever? They too must die, and their lifetimes are even shorter than ours. We can live to be 300 years old, but when we perish, we turn into mere foam on the sea. we have no immortal soul. Human beings, on the contrary, have a soul which lives forever, long after their bodies have turned to clay. It rises through thin air up to the shining stars. Just as we rise through the water to see the lands on earth, so men rise up to beautiful places unknown, which we shall never see. I would gladly give up my 300 years if I could be a human for a day and later share in that heavenly realm.
You must not think about that.
We are much better off than the folk up there. The Little Mermaid, longing for the prince and an eternal soul, visited the sea witch in a dangerous part of the ocean. The witch willingly sold her a potion that would give her legs in exchange for her tongue and beautiful voice. She warned her that once she became a human, she will never be able to return to the sea. And she will only obtain a soul if she won the love of the prince and married him. Otherwise, at dawn on the first day after he married someone else, the Little Mermaid would die with a broken heart and dissolve into sea foam upon the waves. After she agreed to the arrangement, the Little Mermaid swam to the surface near the prince's palace and drank the potion. The liquid felt like a sword piercing through her body, and she passed out on the shore, naked. When she came to, the prince was standing above her. He asked her where she came from, but she couldn't speak. He pulled her up, and for the first time, she saw her two new human legs. He walked her back to his palace to give her clothes, but every step she took was agony. It felt like she was stepping on knives. It was horribly unpleasant, but she knew this was part of the bargain. Over time, the Little Mermaid and the prince became great friends, but unfortunately, nothing more. When the prince's parents encouraged their son to marry, he asked for the temple woman's hand, for he thought she was the one who rescued him after the storm. So the Little Mermaid had no choice but to silently witness the prince marry his new bride aboard a wedding ship. After the ceremony, she looked to the east to see the first red hint of daybreak, for she knew that the first flash of the sun would strike her dead. Then she saw her sisters rise up among the waves. There was no sign of their lovely long hair that the breezes used to blow. It had all been cut off. "We have given our hair to the witch," they said, "so that she would send you help and save you from death tonight. She gave us this knife. Before the sun rises, you must strike it into the prince's heart, and when his warm blood bathes your feet, they will grow together and become a fishtail. Then you will be a mermaid again, and you can come back to us in the sea and live out your 300 years. Hurry!
Come back to us, sister.
We miss you." The Little Mermaid entered the prince's room where he and his bride lay fast asleep. Slowly, she raised the magic blade above his head, and she heard him speak his bride's name in his sleep. The blade fell from her trembling hands. "The prince's happiness is my happiness. Good night, sweet prince." She walked back outside, stood on the edge of the ship, and threw herself into the ocean just as dawn broke. Her body dissolved into foam, but instead of ceasing to exist, she turned into a luminous and ethereal earthbound spirit, a daughter of the air. Because of her selflessness, she was given the chance to earn a soul, and after 300 years of good deeds to humanity, she will rise up to where no mermaid had been before. If you love this story, I highly recommend watching the 1975 animated film from Toei Animation, and I dare you not to cry. Like this video if it gave you the chills, and don't forget to subscribe to Snarled and our sister channels Hissy Fit and Slaytrix. If you or anyone you know have any unique paranormal experiences, send me an email at somethingscary@snarled.com, and I might animate your story. Even if it doesn't fit in with a current theme, it might fit one in the future. And if your story doesn't make it into an episode, tune into my weekly live stream every Wednesday, and I might read it live. If you dare, follow me on Instagram and Twitter @awkwardsapphire. Until next time, sweet dreams.